Hello and welcome to the Mejlis Podcast, Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's current affairs talk show focusing on Central Asia. I'm Bruce Pannier, host of the Mejlis and author of the weekly Central Asia in Focus newsletter. Violence against women is dominating the news in Kazakhstan. A woman was killed in a restaurant by her husband, another woman raped by a police chief, and one young woman has gone public with her story of being raped by a security guard at a nightclub and subsequent dealings with police who pressured her to drop her complaint against her attacker. This is only the tip of the iceberg. The UN reports on average, 400 women are killed by their husbands or male partners annually in Kazakhstan. Human Rights Watch released a report on October 9th urging Kyrgyzstan to criminalize domestic violence. The report included a call from a member of Kyrgyzstan's parliament, Amantay Jarkinbek, that if a woman's husband is sentenced to 15 days of administrative arrest for domestic violence, then, quote, it follows that his wife should be detained too for, quote, provoking the abuse, unquote. How bad is the situation with violence against women in Kazakhstan? And what can be done to correct the abuse against potentially 10 million of the country's citizens? To discuss all this, I am joined by Halit Ajigulova, a lawyer and international consultant on prevention of sexualized exploitation and abuse, Svetlana Zardanova, human rights and corruption researcher at Freedom for Eurasia and associate at the Central Asian Institute for Strategic Studies, Janar Sekervayeva, co-founder of Kazakhstan feminist initiative Feminita, with a focus on lesbian, bisexual, queer, and trans women's rights. She has a PhD in social science, and I'm happy to also add that she's a power lifter and a poet. So, Halita, I'm going to start with you. First, can you kind of give us, so we have the background here, can you give us a description of some of the problems with women's rights and how many women are affected by this?
Well, I would say that the problem with violence against women and girls and children in general is quite a big issue in Kazakhstan. And of course, it didn't start yesterday. It's a quite long-lasting issue. And as an expert and a researcher, I have been raising this issue with our government, the presidential administration, since 2019. And unfortunately, we see that there is a lot of resistance from the official authorities to change anything, to improve the protection mechanisms for any person in the country against violence, to criminalize domestic violence, and generally to make Kazakhstan a safe country for any person. And just recently, over just the last 2 weeks, our country was shocked by a series of very gruesome and violent attacks on women. So we had incidents of violent rape, violent murder as part of domestic violence. We also read stories and shocking news about the rape of minors by alleged police officers. And these are just some of the recent examples just over the last 2 weeks. And I think we reached this peak, this boiling point, in our society when people just don't want to ignore this issue anymore. It's impossible to ignore this issue any longer. And right now we see that we kind of have a wave of a Me Too movement in Kazakhstan when more men and women, they start shaming, naming and shaming those people who have been engaged in violence and those who close their eyes to violence and try to advocate on behalf of alleged perpetrators.
Okay, thank you. Janar, could you add to that a little bit? I mean, what, you know, and speak a little bit about some of these cases. Halita mentioned that there's been some cases in the news recently. Can you kind of explain for our audience a little bit more about these cases?
Yeah, what I would like to stress that in Kazakhstan, actually, we can see, unfortunately, the tendency of the phenomena, which is in Kazakhstan, is not, you know, recognized. This phenomena called femicide, when it is a crime against women based on that they are women. So we have femicide, I think 20, 30 years we were speaking about that. Not only we are maybe the young generation of feminists and activists, but also women who started feminist women's movement in Kazakhstan. I remember, for example, Margarita Uskimbaeva, who started that movement, or Svetlana Shakirova, or Evgenia Kozareva, or Zulfia Baysakova. They ring a bell many, many years ago. And now we can see how only one shocking case or okay two. And of course, I recognize they're very shocking and we have to react. But as Khalida said, it didn't happen yesterday. We had that. And our presidents, two presidents, they was not doing anything regarding this. Although all women's movement were reporting again and again with anxiety, with the big horror statistics that you have to stop as a president of the country or the person who has power to give orders to your staff that this femicide should be prevented. But nobody did care. Nobody. And now we see people who decided, okay, I will speak about that cases. And Dina Tansari was playing crucial role in the Nemalchi KZ. This is the movement that started in Ukraine, Nemogu Skazati. It's like the prototype or was Ukrainian movement. But it was very essential that women decided to speak. It is not like we did not have any crimes against women based on violence, but women just started to speak and report and publicize these cases. Because if you see in these cases, they are very, very different. There are a lot happening at workplace, happening in university, happening at streets, happening in family, at home. Because, you know, our traditional, as you can say, values, they are always prospered by our government. They say traditional family should be cherished by us and by society. And what we see, how traditional families kill themselves, especially killing women and also raping women, raping not only women, but raping also children, their own children. Isn't it something that you should be worried about many, many years ago? Yes, you should have done it before. And now it seems for me like a last loud calls. Oh, we recognize this problem now. Yes, at last, because we see shocking photo. We saw uncles and mothers and fathers' recollection. Why? Why we did not pay attention to that many years ago when we had time to prevent that? This is for me that make me furious. You had all feminist, very strong movement. Now it including LGBT activists like me. And we were shouting about these cases, but nobody listened to.
Okay, thank you. Svetlana, you know, when I'm listening to Janar, I'm hearing, you know, even echoes of things that we've heard in Kyrgyzstan too, that it's part of the mentality of the country for better or for worse, in this case, without a doubt. It's hard to get around the way society has been dealing with these problems for years. What do you think about that in the context of what's been happening in Kazakhstan recently?
Thank you, Bruce, and thank you for having me today with Khalida and Janar, whose awareness raising and activist work in Kazakhstan I really appreciate. Thank you for the question. The question of why society and the law legislation fails women is a complex question. And I was wondering, is it the lack of data? Is it the lack of voices following the situation in Kazakhstan? And I actually can say no to both of this, but it's definitely the lack of good laws. And when laws are in places, their poor implementation. It's the lack of training of the key protection and service providers. On the top of that, I think it's the lack of interest from the state and its lack of political will to change things for the better in the country, for the country's half population. And you rightly mentioned it's like 10 million, more than 10 million people. And these people cannot feel safe on the streets. They cannot feel safe in public spaces. And most importantly, in their own homes. And we usually say that the system is broken when we see that survivors of violence or victims' relatives, they really need to appeal to countries' leaders to help. But I think the system is not broken. I think it's exactly the system. The existing laws, they leave women alone with their abusers. And actually, yes, it is now the momentum for pushing the a better version of the law to protect women in Kazakhstan. But I also very, very much agree with Janar that what have you been doing all those years? I mean, women are killed in Kazakhstan every day. And statistics shows that it's like about 400 women a year, meaning more than one woman is killed like on daily basis in Kazakhstan. It's like, it's a crazy statistics. Of course, I am really fascinated that the Kazakh women from civil society, they keep fighting. They don't let their hands down. They understand. Well, they do a difficult and dangerous job because frontline activists are also targets of public and state violence themselves. So I really salute all the women that are doing this job right now. And I see that what happens exactly in the moment is that women try to kind of name and shame those who either close or avert their eyes from this issue. And they actually push their men to become vocal on the issue. And I know Khalida had an event really recently on that. Right, Khalida?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay. Thank you, Svetlana. And then we go to Khalida then. First, I think we might have got a little ahead of ourselves here in the conversation. For the sake of our audience, who maybe are not following news in Kazakhstan as closely as us, can you explain what happened to Saltanat Nukenova?
Yes, so let me give you some of the details. Indeed, last week, Kazakhstan was shocked to hear news that a young woman, her name is Saltanat Nukenova, allegedly was brutally killed by her husband. And the story about the husband, that was the main thing that actually drew the attention of all the people in Kazakhstan, because the alleged perpetrator is, his name is Bishimbaev, Kuandik Bishimbaev, and he is a so-called representative of kind of a so-called kind of golden youth. The youth who were born in wealthy families with big political influence. Kuandik Bishimbaev, according to his bio, he's the son of one of the rectors of big regional universities. And at a quite early age, he became an advisor to the president of Kazakhstan, the first president. He also worked as a minister of economy, quite young one, and he was also heading some of the largest national corporations in Kazakhstan, which were holding a lot of wealth, like nation fund, national sovereign fund. And already a few years ago, Mr. Bishimbaev was already accused and he was convicted for quite serious corruption crime. And he actually was sentenced to 10 years in prison and in 2018. So he was supposed to be in prison now until 2028. But he appealed to the president back in 2019, asked for his pardon, and then eventually he was in prison just for 2 years. And then he was released. He was released, and that's why the people of Kazakhstan were shocked that basically if this man were in prison, as he should have been, then this horrible murder would not have happened. And that's why there is a lot of attention to this case. But also another big thing which drew the attention is that right after the incident, some quite popular bloggers in Kazakhstan, they started writing posts about with some alleged facts, alleged details of the crime. And people realized that there is apparently an attempt to say that, you know, Mr. Bishimbaev has nothing to do with the murder, that actually it was not a murder at all, that allegedly killed woman. She was fine and she just went to sleep and then she didn't wake up, you know, and basically they tried to lead the discussion in a way that as if she died while she was sleeping. And of course, when we also heard the account of the story from the relatives of the murdered woman, we heard some very, very, very terrible and horrific details that, for example, she lost her eye and that she had some serious wounds in her head, over her body, on her back. And that's when we had this public outcry that people didn't want this to happen, that an alleged perpetrator, an alleged murderer would get away from any punishment. And that's why there's a lot of public attention to the case.
Okay, thank you. Janar, I'm going to ask you this question. I follow, of course, Irina Matvienko, and she's Nemolchi Ooz. And she wrote just a couple days ago that the resonance on such news is higher if the violence is committed by state officials. And she says that she never met such a level of resonance if the crime was committed by ordinary people. This is more about distrust of the state and not about intolerance for violence. In the case of Bishimbaev, do you think that's true?
Yeah, when in Kazakhstan, unfortunately, society and actually the state officials themselves, they started to pay attention if, for example, there are their colleagues who are doing that kind of crime or violence, because it become more resonance. And of course, I do not share that kind of shock. I mean, of course, I'm shocked. But it is not fair to ordinary woman, to, for example, my mom, my aunt, or my sister, or sisters of many, many women in Kazakhstan, or their mothers, because we are not in the, you know, we are not MP, we are not close to president's family. So when something happens to us, the violence itself, so it means nobody cares. And this is not fair, because if it is violence or if it is a crime based on gender-based violence, sexualized violence, it should be recognized as such. And also it should be given very strict punishment, which we do not see in Kazakhstan for many years. And who played a big role in that? I would say anti-gender movement in Kazakhstan, led by Kazakhstani Union of Parents, which came with very similar to Russian narrative, because they started from anti-vaccination, children's right. They started to say that we do not should have concept of bullying. So they suggested just to bully young children at school. So, and then they go to anti-LGBT, and then they go to also anti-women's rights agenda. And what we see now, because we warned state, we warned officials in our public statements that anti-gender movement is very, very dangerous, because they are spreading, this is, you know, Russian propaganda. Yes, we can call it propaganda. Propaganda against human rights itself in general. We warned, because in 2021, I experienced attacks from male mob organized by local committee of national security and also Akimat, our local council, but nobody listened to. So then we have Kandahar January events, and now we have all these things that influenced by anti-gender movement. It is the fruits of this work of anti-gender movement, which is spreading their conspirology. They are very harming to women's rights, human rights defenders, and all, including Khalida, who is today with us, including Dina Tansari, including other brave women who raises the agenda of violence, agenda of discrimination, agenda of protecting children. So this is a fact. We have this movement that is harming the society.
Okay, thank you. Svetlana, I'd like to get your views on that too. Do you find that if a high level or some official is involved, that the attention on this is far greater than if it was just an ordinary citizen, a woman who wasn't in, it wasn't a state official they were involved with, she doesn't have a post in any government post or anything? Are those people just totally forgotten and neglected in these stories compared to someone who's been killed or raped by an official?
Yeah, this is partly true. This is a story of an elite family. It's a violence in an elite Kazakh family. And that, of course, got an attention of the whole society, because it's a ex-minister. And I really see here some similarities with what we see in Kyrgyzstan. And whenever it is people from law enforcement agencies or someone close to the government, then we see more reaction in the society and more outcry, like public outcry in the society. And what happens in Kazakhstan is that I follow at the moment. It can be part of the story, but another part of the story is that the cases of violence are so repeating, and we see so many of them in the recent weeks, that, as Khalida said, maybe the society reached the boiling point and they now kind of demand some changes from the government. And yes, this can be some parts of the society that push a different agenda, anti-human rights agenda, some traditionalist agenda. But on many of these cases, I think we can really, we should really spotlight the government's attempts to either do something or to sweep something under the carpet. And that's what the Kazakh government has been doing for so many years. And the Kazakh legislation that actually humanized some of the articles on domestic violence and on some of the beatings, it's now moved, it has been moved from the criminal code to administrative code, and it can, and punished, not by prison terms, but by fines and, detention up to 10, 15 days. I mean, women really do not feel protected, and they see the moment right now to demand better protection. And I have seen that the president was asked to kind of get this exact case under control, and also to take some other measures to change the legislation. And I really hope that this really gruesome case will have an effect of changing the situation in Kazakhstan for all women and actually children, because recent cases of children under attack, like rape in school, even in schools, like our children are not safe. So I really hope that this is a turning point for women in Kazakhstan.
Okay, thank you. And a reminder, we're talking about violence against women in Kazakhstan and what could be done to prevent it. And my guests are Svetlana Zardanova, human rights and corruption researcher at Freedom for Eurasia and associate at the Central Asia Institute for Strategic Studies, Janar Sekerbayeva, co-founder of Kazakhstan's feminist initiative Feminita, with a focus on lesbian, bisexual, queer, and trans women's rights. And she also has a PhD in social sciences. Khalida Ajigulova, a lawyer and international consultant on prevention of sexual exploitation and abuse. Thanks again for being on the show once again. Janar, I'm going to come to you. We've got this case that's come up too. This young woman's name is so far we only know her as Olzhan. She was raped by the security guard at a nightclub at knife point, and the security guard actually videotaped it, and she made a complaint about it. And now here we are in November, and she's still saying police have been reluctant and slow to investigate the case. In fact, I think one time she said that the police had actually tried to pressure her to drop the case and said that she shouldn't worry because they'll make sure that her attacker deletes the video so he couldn't use it to blackmail her in the future. What does this say about police response to sexual assault?
Our police actually doesn't care. They're very ignorant. They do not care about their public image. And their public image is, you know, it's like the floor, ground floor. They are not caring about what they say, how they publish their press release or any statement. Actually, they are needing the whole reformation. I suggested with my colleagues many years ago, all policemen that we have now should go to retirement. That's it. We ready to pay them their pension. And we should hire young women and young men who are from the new generation, people who really care about gender violence, about, you know, any kind of crime that can happen in Kazakhstan. Because this generation of men who is in the system, they are already get used to the system violence, and they are covering many, many crimes. All we see is how the victim or the person who suffered from violence and also including rapes, that they are saying, we just can cite here, that policemen, they're saying that they do not care about investigation of the rape. How you can hear these words? How it can support you if you are already experienced that amount, that horrific amount of violence? So just imagine, this staff is not sensitive. This staff is not receiving any trainings. So I'm really shocked how they work in police, how they wake up, see themselves in the mirror, eat their breakfast and go to work. I really do not understand these people, because they are not working, because they are harming these victims, they are harming women, they are harming children. And then maybe in the end, they are harming men. But what I see, they are in solidarity with the men who are doing harassment, who are doing rapes, who are doing all kinds of crime.
Okay, thank you. Halida, I want to ask you about the same question, but can we also, I also want to add the case in Taldykorgan. It's not even a case of police compliance or neglect or something. In Taldykorgan, the police chief, whose name is Murat Kushtibayev, actually raped a 27-year-old woman who was in the police station, and he had her brought to the office. What is, again, this, the question is, what does this say about the police, and what does this say to women if you are the victim of a crime, of a gender-based crime? Who can you turn to? I mean, the police are supposed to be the ones that are protecting you.
You know, Bruce, this is another very big issue, such as violence perpetrated by police officers themselves. And I, in particular, have been raising this issue for several years. Almost 2 years ago, I sent my recommendations to the president of Kazakhstan on the reform of police, because I knew about many of these incidents when police officers harassed and sexually abused their colleagues, their female colleagues. And female police officers themselves, they complained to me that one of the reasons why they had to quit their job is because they were harassed by their fellow police colleagues, and they couldn't get any support from their supervisors. And that's why I realized that sexualized harassment, sexualized abuse within the police forces is a very big issue that not only prevents women, the most talented police women, to get to the top in the Ministry of Interior, but also this is a big risk to the public, to female, in particular to women who approach the police, who, and also, for example, women who ask for some assistance from police, but also for women who may be accused of some crimes and offenses. And unfortunately, in this particular case, which is absolutely atrocious, such as alleged rape of a young woman by the chief of police, and we know that at the moment the police, the chief police officer has been arrested for further investigation. This is absolutely horrible. And I would say that in particular, apart from the systemic reforms of police, we need to inform, we need to raise the awareness of our people in general, how to communicate with police officers. And I also would like to note that not only it is dangerous for women to communicate with police officers, but also for men, because unfortunately we do have some reports that male applicants, they can be also sexually abused by police officers when they are detained or when they're brought for interrogation and so on. So here I would like to say that two mostly needed reforms is, first of all, we need, in my view, we need to change up to 95% of staff of the police forces in Kazakhstan. And this was my recommendation to the president. And I recommended that this should be, this reform should be implemented over 2-3 years. So the change would be gradual. And we really need to bring new people to the police, new people who don't have any connection or any bad reputation with corruption, with past crimes, people who would be new, you know, who would not be spoiled by the system. And this is a very big thing if we want to raise the trust from the public to the authorities, to the police. And secondly, of course, I recommended that we need to have more women at the senior political decision-making in the Ministry of Interior. Unfortunately, over the last 32 years, we didn't have any woman at the level of the senior leadership in the Ministry of Interior, not a minister or his or her or deputy ministers, head of committees, and also the territorial level. We never had any women at the leading positions as the chief police officers at the territorial level. So that's why all these situations, such as a lack of women's representation, at the leadership positions in the Ministry of Interior and Police, and also the rise in violence against people perpetrated by police officers. This is a very big correlation, in my view.
Okay, thank you. Svetlana, I'd like to get you to follow up on some of this too, since you're the Central Asia researcher. How big a problem is it that the lack of women in positions of authority, especially, particularly in the Interior Ministry and the police departments?
I think it's a common issue for all Central Asian states that we really like women in decision-making positions in the government. And whenever we do have women in such structures, their number is so small that they are kind of pressured by their male colleagues into their own agenda. So until we have enough women in decision-making structures, we probably will not see the change, because whenever it comes to gender-based violence, whenever it comes to gender discrimination and some specific social issues that mainly are covered by women, we won't see any change. And this is a very sad, and also the forecast for this is not very optimistic, that we will have all these women in places to change things. As of now, we see that all the job that government is not doing is done by activists, by a civil society sector. And while they can work with the effect of what we have in place, they cannot actually do anything with the core issues of that. So more and more of what I see in the region is that civil society sector is put in a challenging position of mere survival. So it is also interesting and surprising to see how Central Asian governments are not doing their own job, and they also prevent civil society from doing the job for them. So as I said earlier, I think it's really a problem of lack of political will on the part of the Kazakh government or Kyrgyz government when it comes to gender issues, and specifically gender-based violence. Because traditionally, when we talk about traditions in Central Asia, we speak almost always about respect for the family, respect for the elders, and respect for women. But it's what we declare and not what we follow when it comes to protecting women, when it comes to opening opportunities for them, like in business or in public life or in politics. So until we have this in place, I don't see we have any change. And when it comes to law enforcement, it is true that it's so heavily male-dominated that the few women that are in the system, they cannot change the situation. And we really, really need the reform of this vital sector for the protection. We don't actually work with preventing the violence against women, and we fail them at the consequences. We also fail them with punishing the perpetrators. And until the reform is done, this is unfortunately what we will continue to see.
Excellent. Thank you. And that helps me transition into the last section of our show. I have a couple questions, and I want to get the responses from each of you. The first is, what needs to change in the law? And I know we've gone over some of this, but in your opinion, and I'll start with you, Khalida, what needs to change in the law in Kazakhstan to improve the situation?
I would say that the law should be definitely reviewed in terms of being redrafted with the human-centered approach. We still have this issue that the authorities, that members of parliament, when they review or when they consider some piece of legislation relating to human rights, for some reason, they never take human rights as a priority. They take as a priority all other types of considerations, economic, political, family, and so on. And I believe that this is really a test for our authorities, test for our president, members of parliament. If they claim that they want to build a new democracy, a new Kazakhstan, they need to really change all their approaches. They need to drop all these approaches of the old Kazakhstan, so-called. And really, I would recommend that the authorities would listen more to independent experts, to researchers in human rights who have a strong reputation, who have renowned global reputation. And finally, the authorities, they should turn their face to the people of Kazakhstan, and they should show their political will that they are indeed that they indeed have this zero tolerance to all forms of violence. So once we have this in our laws, that human life, human dignity is at the center of the laws against domestic violence, then I believe the law will work and will have all important measures on protection of every person in their country against all forms of violence.
Thank you. Svetlana, what needs to change in the law?
Well, as I said, even if we have good laws in place and they are not working, nothing is working. So I think the application of the law should be stricter. The government should at least implement the laws that they have in place. There definitely should be consequences for the government officials, for the law enforcement, for not acting on the cases of violence. And as of now, what I see is that we don't see much of the acting on the violent cases. And we see that officials and people in decision-making positions, they actually protect the perpetrators. They defend the perpetrators because they associate with them. And if we look at the law enforcement and we research law enforcement closely, we will understand that many of the police officers are perpetrators and abusers themselves. And then it's easier for them to associate with perpetrators and not act on the cases of gender-based violence and pressure victims of violence not to file complaints and not to follow up on these complaints. So I think consequences for such officials, consequences for police officers for not acting on these cases should be strict. And I think, of course, that we should criminalize, like return some of the articles that were moved from the criminal code to administrative code back. And sometimes it's not about the harshness of the punishment, but inevitability of this punishment. So when the perpetrators, when abusers, they know that the government, the society will act on their behavior, it will actually change the scene. And as of now, these people, they know that they can avoid any consequences, any punishment, and that what leads to the levels, huge levels of gender-based violence in Kazakhstan and in the whole Central Asian region.
Hey, thank you. Janar, what needs to change in the law?
We have a pause that lasting for 3 years. 3 years, our parliament cannot accept the bill on domestic resistance to domestic abuse and domestic violence. So this fact can say a lot without even my comment. But what I suggest as an activist, as a woman, a human rights defender, is that we need also separate law. And I know our deputy tomorrow, if they will know that I'm saying now, they will shout and, you know, loudly be so angry. Why we multiply so many laws? If you do violence, keep continue, not prosecuting, not investigating violence in regarding women and children, we have to have separate law. So everybody in Kazakhstan will understand that you will be punished. You will have great consequences. You can be in jail, or your property will be confiscated, which I am suggesting, or you publicly will be shamed, you know. I also suggesting that you will lose all your state positions. I'm also suggesting that, because today it's just administrative code. No, this is not how the case should be dealt, you know. We have to have separate law. It is enough. We're shouting every year, it is enough. We need a law. We have a lot of lawyers. We have a lot of prosecutors. They can accept to work on separate law, to read it, till the end to understand it, to interpret it, and then persecute the people who abuse women's rights and rights of children in Kazakhstan.
Okay, thank you. Janar, I'm going to come right back to you because we're going to start with the second question, but I want responses from everyone if possible. What needs to change in the way people of Kazakhstan think about violence against women?
Yeah, well, this is a big educational work, actually, that should be starting from the kindergarten, then from school, and then from colleges, and then from universities. We are not having that kind of classes or, you know, programs or facultatives, but we need them. We need to educate people. We need to speak, to have discussions on why violence is not accepted. Violence towards children, towards women, towards men, towards animals, towards LGBT, towards other groups that need protection. We need that discussion. This could be a class about humanity. I do not say this is a class about Constitution of Kazakhstan, which sounds very boring. No, we can say it's about humanity. It's about dignity. It's about how to be a Kazakhstani person, how to be a real human being in Kazakhstani land, what we would like to see from the human being. This is a very philosophical and very ideological context. I don't know. I do not need to be a patriot of my country. I do know. I do need to discuss why violence should not be accepted. So I really do not see how our state works in that direction. We do not see any classes, program, lectures, seminars. They just, chilling. Chilling, selling gas and oil, having a lot of money, but not doing their work. And yes, Svetlana was right. It is civil rights, human rights defenders, civil society, activists, LGBTQI activists who are doing that work. And we are very tired because it's a lot of work. It's, huge work. And we need money for that, you know. So state with the power and money can do this educational work because it's actually state's aim, it's state's strategy, purpose to bring this education to the population of Kazakhstan.
Okay, thank you. Halida, I'll go to you next. What needs to change in the way the people of Kazakhstan think about violence against women?
You know, I believe right now it is important for the whole society in Kazakhstan to show their solidarity against all forms of violence against any person in the country. And I'm very happy to see that we have a few quite prominent activists like Mr. Rahim Oshakbayev, an independent researcher, who started a campaign, Men Against Violence. And they started it a few days ago, and they invited all, you know, men who have a big audience, who may be called influencers. And all of them, they openly denounced violence against women, against children. And they also developed a plan of action until the end of 2024, where they pledged and made a commitment that until the end of next year, they will be taking particular steps and actions to stop violence against women. And I'm happy to see that, of course, apart from women have always been at the forefront, you know, but we see more and more men joining this movement, more and more men denouncing domestic violence, gender-based violence, but also saying that we are not going to shake hands of our friends or people whom we know who have been committing violence against their wives, against women, and so on. And I think this is very important to change the mentality of our population and to show that indeed we should not tolerate violence any longer.
Okay, thank you. Svetlana, question to you. What needs to change in the mentality in Kazakhstan to improve the situation?
Yeah, exactly, because change is not possible with the existing mindset that it is like violence against women is women's problem, because it's not. It's the whole society's problem, because violence really affects everyone. It affects other members of the family, starting with children, other family members. It affects the community, like smaller communities, and it affects people on a country level. And so this mindset that it's only the women's problem, it really should change. And what Khalida was talking about, that men are now showing more and more solidarity. And I have seen posts of many Kazakh bloggers that tried actually to address this issue, following up this horrendous events. But I also seen the backlash on their poor attempts actually to address the issue, because they were addressing women. They were addressing women and, again, mansplaining what women should do not to get beaten, or how to react to the beatings, or how they should leave at the occasion of the beating and stuff like that. And they, what they really need to do is that they should really reflect on their own behavior, on behavior of their friends, on the attitudes towards abusers, and they should start addressing these issues among themselves. I mean, address other your fellow men, saying that this is, well, not cool to be to hit women. And it's what we need to see is we need to see the training of law enforcement. If we are not changing the law enforcement entirely, as Janar suggested, like getting rid of all the old law enforcement and police and bringing up new blood, if we're not doing this, we at least should have the training of them and of frontline service providers on how to actually work with victims. And yes, it's it brings some optimism to see that people are starting to empathize with the issue. We see more solidarity now. And I think what solidarity is key here. And I think when we understand that this is the whole society issue, we will see the change. Because when half of the population is living under constant threat of violence, what kind of development we foresee for the country? I don't see any way for the country to prosper if half of the population doesn't feel safe.
Okay, thank you. We are like pretty much out of time, but this is a really important topic, and I'm afraid I might have missed something. So I'm going to give everyone one chance to make a last statement if you want. Please try to keep it short if you can. Svetlana, I'll start with you.
I would just have to thank you, Bruce, for keeping the issue alive on talking about this issue. And I would like to express my appreciation of what Khalida is doing and Janar is doing and all the activists, frontline activists in Kazakhstan are doing to fight gender-based violence, discrimination, and stereotypes in the country. This is it.
Okay, thank you. Janar, to you, anything that I missed that you think our audience should understand?
Yes, I think we should not forget the names of many women who are invisible and who are doing their work in regions of Kazakhstan. They cannot sometimes post something in social media about their very important work, but it doesn't mean they are not existing in Shymkent, Taraz, or Oral, or other cities of Kazakhstan. They work every day for keeping women's rights or helping them with documents or, unfortunately, to hide from abuser. This is really daily life, everyday fight. So I think we even do not know their names, but they are there in the field. So we have to recognize that this labor is really very, we have to value them. We have to say that women, again, on the forefront of the fight of the civil society with that problem. And never forget that this fight is still continuously going. And when we speak about this, oh, let's help women to fight with this issue, how men just recently started, I would like to tell them one thing. You cannot solve this issue just in 3 days, while all women of Kazakhstan and women's rights activists who were brave, bold, who were fighting for that 30 years. 3 days or 30 years? This is the difference. Thank you.
Thank you. Khalida, last word goes to you.
Yes, thank you, Bruce. Indeed, this is a very important topic, and I'm very grateful to your organization, to you personally, and also to people around the globe for giving this support to protecting women from violence in Kazakhstan and Central Asia. And also I would like to emphasize one more important thing. We not only should support women in their fight against violence and promote and demand better laws, but we also need to give our support to women who are now persecuted by authorities in Kazakhstan, in Central Asia, for their work on protecting other women from violence. Unfortunately, right now in Kazakhstan, our prominent human rights defender, Dinara Smailova, she has been under persecution from the authorities exactly for her work, for her brave, bold work when she was widely covering the issues of violence against women. Unfortunately, right now she has to seek asylum abroad, and I would much appreciate also the support of the international community in supporting Dinara Smailova, and I hope that this persecution against her by the authorities of Kazakhstan would stop. Thank you.
Okay, great. Thank you for mentioning that. And we are at the end of the show, so thank you, Janar, Halida, and Svetlana for being on the program. Big thanks, as always, to Nathan Shoemaker, our Medjlis podcast producer in Washington, D.C. And a reminder, you can subscribe to the Medjlis podcast or the Central Asia in Focus newsletter by visiting Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's website at rferl.org. Thanks, and we'll be back next week. Bye-bye.